Welcome back. What you just heard there was Santa Claus is a Black Man by Akeem and Teddy Van. We just thought that'd be an appropriate way to begin part of this conversation, given the insanity that took place because of what Megyn Kelly said. But it actually can cause us to have some more interesting conversations. If you go right now to our Facebook sites, both the Mark Steiner Show site and the Mark Steiner site, you'll see a portrait of how the was reconstructed portrait, we'll talk about that, of what Jesus may have looked like. Just take a look at those, and I want you to call us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here, steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to those Facebook pages and put your comments there. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. But just look at those pictures. If you want to jump on the Facebook, I'd love to have you look either at Mark Steiner or the Mark Steiner Show and take a look at this at the picture. That came out of a forensic anthropologist who, after huge research on that period, reconstructed what may have been the face of Jesus as a Palestinian, as a person who lived in that world. What would he have looked like? Take a look at that picture. It's a brown-skinned man, short hair, beard, and we'll talk about all that with our guests. Joining me in the studio is the Reverend Dr. Brad Braxton. Brad Braxton has been in the studio many times before. He's senior pastor here at the Open Church in Baltimore and the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. Good to see you again, Brad.
Great to be with you, Mark. Thanks.
Edward Bloom joins us by phone. He's an associate professor of history at San Diego University, co-author of The Color of Christ, The Son of God, and the Saga of Race in America. Edward Bloom, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Good morning.
410-319-8888. Please join us. So this is, you know, this when – when she said on the news, on that piece, you know, that just face it, everybody, Santa Claus is white and so is Jesus. Get over it. Some people started saying, so what difference does it make? What difference does it make, Brad?
I think it's important in this conversation for us to keep the main thing the main thing. In some sense, you might have people say, well, you have this mythic figure like Santa Claus. You have some people who may not even be religious, who don't really put a whole lot of stock in Jesus of Nazareth to begin with. So how is this a big issue? The issue is not what Megyn Kelly said so much, rather the underlying understandings of it. And that is, this gives us an opportunity to have a serious conversation about the role of symbols in our lives. So what we are needing in this moment is a deeper analysis of symbols and I think secondarily an analysis of privilege. She's able to say the things that she says because what's at work, just to be very blunt and upfront, is white privilege. There are other kinds of oppressive privileges I'm sure we can talk about as the time goes on. But the fundamental issues here are the role of symbols and how people's sensibilities are heightened around symbols like Santa Claus and Jesus and issues of privilege. Who has privilege and who doesn't?
I think that's a big piece. Is Edward Bloom?
Yeah, you know, I think the why it matters strikes me for two reasons. One is that Ms. Kelly kind of revealed some deeply held associations, you know, that where she inserted Jesus into the conversation, this is a discussion about, oh, how we depict Santa Claus, then somehow, some way, the Son of God, to many people, is brought into the equation. And I think what it reveals is this association of whiteness with godliness. And why is that deeply held value important? Because I think it's something we learn, you know, before we're 3 years old, before we're 5 years old, and we learn to associate a racial category with ultimate power, an ultimate meaning, an ultimate humanity. And then, lo and behold, we have a nation where certain bodies are just seen, are just felt to be more valuable than other bodies. And we don't even know why we feel that way. And I shouldn't say everyone feels that way, but there's that sense. And so I think what she exposes are some really deeply held associations where the symbols, as the Reverend put it, really, really matter.
And this is so complex in so many ways. I mean, I want to talk about both Santa Claus and Jesus because I think they're both important here at this time of year to think about what we're symbolizing and who was who and why was it important or not important. When you see the first images of Jesus being painted in the 7th century, where it was a depiction of Jesus in dark hair and long hair, the question was, did they have long hair or not? And so we'll talk about that in a minute as well. But whatever country Jesus was portrayed in, the ethnicity of that country came through in the painting in many ways.
Yes.
Right? Same thing if you look at Buddha. The Buddha portrayal in Indian Buddha looks very different than Buddhas you see in sometimes Vietnam and China. And so we have a tendency to do that. And then comes into the mix several hundred years later the issue of race. Nobody thought about race in that part of human history. That wasn't a factor. Brad?
You've put your finger on a very important distinction that I think we need to make, and that is the distinction between history and theology. When we do theology, we often, in our quest to reach out to the sacred, try to depict that which we find most sacred and divine in our own image. It's kind of the reverse of the great biblical truth that as humans, we are made in the image of God. Often, as we try to quest after God, we attempt to make God in our image. And so that's what you see across this cultural span. As people are questing for the divine, they often depict the divine in their image. That's good theology. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem becomes when people who are in power and who have behind them governments and militaries and taxation policies then take what is theology and try to smuggle it in as history, therefore saying that, as Professor said a moment ago, the, quote, Son of God, end quote, was a white man. Therefore, so-called Christian nations are able to engage in the genocide of peoples all across the transatlantic borders in the name of this white Jesus. Therefore, millions of people have been slaughtered behind this, such that one particular slave ship was actually named Jesus. So in that
really?
Sense, theology
that I didn't know.
Becoming, quote, history has genocidal implications.
Ed, you want to just jump in?
Yeah, you know, Reverend Braxton kind of took a lot of words out of my mouth. it's funny, the two first English slave ships in the West African slave trade, one was named the Good Ship Jesus, the other was named Minion, right, for a devil. There's all kind of fascinating stuff happening there. I think I would agree with you that localism is not the same as racism. Okay, localism, I like the people that I come from, I even want to represent Jesus to look like my locale or from my locale. That's just all humans kind of trend that way. Racism at one level has to be about the ability to use one's authority, and have the ability to impress upon others one's will. That will might be how to see the world. That will might be labor and work, right? And so when Jesus becomes a tool of racism, it's basically where I'm able to take my vision of the world, my vision of Jesus, and impress it upon others. So, for instance, we all might have the ability to draw an image of Jesus, but we don't have the ability to mass produce a billion of them and send them throughout the world. Well, guess what? White Americans have had that ability and have done it. And then, lo and behold, we have people throughout the world stretching out their hands to pictures of the actor Jim Caviezel playing Jesus, thinking, acting like that's actually Jesus because of that mass production power that allows a racial view to parade itself as sacred truth.
So I'm curious what you all think at 410-319-8888. Some comments have come in on Facebook. Write to us there. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet me here at Mark Steiner. And the picture on the web, I want to say, was created by a medical artist, a guy named Richard Neave, who was part of a long-term research project where they took skeletons from the time when people think Jesus lived and took the skulls, read books about what people looked like, how they described themselves in that community at that time, looked at that very carefully, and then created as medical artist facial features. And so the man, if you look on the page, came out as Jesus in this particular picture, is a man who is brown-skinned, like many Palestinians, brown-eyed, short-haired, because there's a whole question about Paul and long hair, which is why they did the short hair. We can talk a bit about that. So Tracy Wood wrote in on our Facebook page, he sure wouldn't be allowed in this country. Wow. So
raises a lot of issues, and I wonder to what degree, if this portrait resembles an African Asiatic Jew in his early 30s, which is what Jesus of Nazareth was, would this particular man be welcomed in many churches? Let alone the country, but the very religion that has grown up around him, many of its practitioners, because of deep-seated issues of privilege and misunderstandings of the pernicious ways that race can work, would not welcome this very man, the one about whom the religion has been founded.
Last night, I'll go to the phones here, in preparation for this, I started also studying some maps of Middle East history. From BCE to now, and you can see empires moving back and forth that were Persian, that were Jewish, that were Egyptian, that were affected by the Africa below Egypt, that were affected by the Persians, who are a people who, in terms of 20th century modern terminology, would look more white. And that confluence of where the land of Palestine, which people thought about from where Gaza is now all the way up through Syria and west through Jordan as a place that was historically thought about as Palestine, as a place that was this crossroads of all these cultures, you know, that and the people were an amalgam of those cultures. And
indeed,
we forget that.
Indeed.
Because we're so used to seeing the image that anybody grew up with in most churches saw, which is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, which it's possible, but not likely.
And I will say, too, some of my greatest difficulties as a religious leader and as a seminary professor and theologian have been attempting in cross-cultural settings, and especially with some of my white brothers and sisters who are Christians, to even get the conversation started about how their depictions of Jesus that are Eurocentric can create significant cultural and religious difficulty for the vast majority of the world who are not white persons. And again, I'm not trying to generalize and say this about all of a cultural group, but as someone who's been on the interface
yep.
of this academic and religious conversation, it is a very difficult thing, which lets me know how deep-seated these images are and how problematic it is. It creates real dissonance, cognitive dissonance, for some white Christians in particular to think about Jesus in any other way than the depictions they've grown up with.
And that's important. And Edward Bloom, on the way, I do want to get Benjamin and Alan, the next first two callers up, we're going to get your calls. I just want Edward to jump off on this one point, because that's part of what you were writing about the saga of race in America and images of Jesus.
Yeah, I think... You know, two kind of words are striking me here. One is that it's touchy, right? That Jesus and his race becomes a touchy subject, especially for people who, you know, who haven't had to, quote-unquote, think about it cognitively. So most white Americans have just been able to, you know, bebop around and not see any dissonance between that image and what I or my community look like. And so when someone challenges, questions, it's like, ooh, somehow at a kind of guttural level, right, that's a touchy subject. And I'm struck by how there's this rage to reduce, that somehow we want to reduce the complexity of Jesus into a kind of racial container. You know, like, oh, so he's white or not white, as if that would mean, have deep meaning 2,000 years ago, when there's so much complexity. I mean, Jesus said so many things. He touched and was touched by so many different people. Rather than grapple with those issues, folks want to, you know, either avoid or obsess about this physical container. You know, that's what I find is so interesting, how touchy it is and how people try to reduce, you know, Jesus to, you know, like a racial marker.
Let me open the phone. Do you have something you want to say real fast before we get the phones?
The one thing I would like to just introduce, and this is around this issue of privilege, as Professor Bloom has said, when you don't have to think about something, that is one of the key indicators that you as a member of a group enjoy that group's privilege. Whether you are a white person, whether you are a male, whether you are heterosexual, whether you are Christian, the various kinds of isms that we have and the imperialism around the various groups that we associate ourselves with, it's when you don't have to think about that membership in any particular way and you're oblivious to the other groups in the world and how they might feel about the power associated with your membership, that's when privilege is at work. Privilege is most at work when it just becomes the air you breathe and it's not something that you're consciously aware of.
410-319-8888. Take a phone call. I want to wait till we come back from break. He's sort of saying, go to break. Okay, Benjamin, we're going to come right back. And all these calls coming in now, we're going to get to all of your calls, 1, 2, 3, 4 in a row. Benjamin, you're the first one up as soon as we come back from break. And we'll touch on Santa Claus as well when we return. Beethoven, his birthday as well. We're here with Dr. Brad Braxton, who is senior pastor at the Open Church in Baltimore, Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas, Dr. Edward Bloom, Associate Professor of History at San Diego State University, co-author of the book The Color of Christ, The Son of God, and the Saga of Race in America. You can tweet us here at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages where we have posted one of those images that people think of what Jesus may have looked like, maybe actually closer to the fact of what he looked like than what we think. Than the images that we have in the West, I should say. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Benjamin in Columbia. Benjamin, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark. Season greetings to you and your guests. We can go to Santa Claus or we can go to Jesus. Well, if you go to Jesus, you read the first chapter of Solomon. If you go to the descendants from Solomon to David through the genealogy of Joseph of Jesus Christ. Now, I think someone said something about Persian and Asiatic. Asiatic is out of Russia, Poland. All of the people that are coming out of those areas are mostly Asiatic. Egypt, Greek, all of those people are Persian, mostly out of the area that today we would say Iranian, Palestinians. Those people are the people that you are depicting that picture as. Now, everybody that got a beard ain't really holy. And the professors that we have here today is reading a theology that the system has put here for them to understand what they want. But the professors supposed to be teaching the truth from the universities that they attend. Now, I think Wes, the gentleman out of Princeton, has been touching on a lot of good things that he's going around. And I'm telling you, a lot of people don't know this. This brother is gifted with a lot of things that has happened in Princeton, in New Jersey, that people should look at where these genealogies have come from. And I believe that if they start really getting into the real, real truth about what that tree is, it's a green tree, a silver tree, a gold tree, that you put gifts under there. Now, who would get benefit from that tree? The rich man, the people that sell produce products, that's the Santa Claus that I've always been taught, because Santa Claus is not December. It's Kwanzaa, his gift in January. You as a people, we as a people, should look at what we do at a time. We are supposed to be in the spiritual birth of Christ.
Okay.
Worshiping the Spirit, not in the way of gifts and buying all the material things. So if people are making the money, is the white man. So if you want to say the white man Santa Claus, that's what Santa Claus is. Thank you.
Thank you, Benjamin.
So let me, I appreciate your, Brother Benjamin, I appreciate your concern for the truth. And let me share with you a few things that I think are at least truth-like. Number one, about Jesus. I think even the most skeptical historian would say, regardless of what Jesus looked like, he willingly gave his life, that is, put himself in a place where he knew he might be executed, and indeed he was, for the sake of people who did not have privilege. That this is a brother who gave himself in willing sacrifice to help other people, particularly poor people. So for me, the truth at the end of the day, whatever Jesus looked like, those of us who claim to have some association with him, to follow his teachings, even to worship him, ought to also be willing to engage in sacrificial struggle for people who don't have means. The second thing that I find very interesting about Jesus, if you want to talk about truth, is that brother spent most of his life trying to heal people. And I think, for example, rather than getting all caught up in what color he was, if we had serious conversations about his health care agenda, then we'd have less wrangling about the Affordable Health Care Act. So, I mean, there are lots of things we can do with the social justice agenda of Jesus, which I think are at least truth-like, if not the truth. And for me, ultimately, whatever you think about Santa Claus and his color, this is about generosity. I don't care what color Santa Claus is. The world needs more generosity. We need more gift giving and more kindness. You know, so at the end of the day, those are the truths I think we need to be focusing on.
Any thoughts on this, Edward, before I play a quick clip here about the color of Santa?
No, go for it.
This came out of Saturday Night Live that my wife turned me on to. She said, I fell asleep during this part of Saturday Night Live. I didn't see it. So she showed it to me this morning. Let's play this clip on what color is Santa?
This week, Fox News host Megyn Kelly sparked controversy when she said, quote, kids, Santa is white. And just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to change. Here with his comments is Santa Claus.
Hey! Hello, everyone. Merry Christmas. Hello, Cecily.
Wow, you're Santa.
That's right. I guess the truth is out. You heard a secret Santa. Well, here's a secret for you. I'm black as hell.
I never knew.
Oh, good. It's better for everybody that way. You know how many presents I gotta deliver? I can't afford to get pulled over every 10 minutes.
I mean, so you're okay with people thinking Santa is white?
Well, a white guy taking credit for something a black guy did. I'm more used to it than okay with it. Yeah, history always gets whitewashed. I bet you never knew that there's a rewritten verse in The Night Before Christmas.
Seriously?
Yeah. Let me read you the original. His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, they amazed. And when I saw him, I exclaimed, damn, is that Isaac Hayes?
Oh. But so it doesn't bother you when people like Megyn Kelly insist that you're white?
Well, I'm surprised that people ever thought I wasn't black. Have you ever known a white man to wear an all-red suit?
So I just thought we'd throw that in. We could use it. 410-319-8888. Alan, you're on the air.
See, and I always thought Santa would look like Art Carney with a hangover.
You're showing your age. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's still my favorite Christmas movie is Night of the Meek. But anyway, getting back to Jesus, what upsets so many people, if Jesus is, quote-unquote, God's son, then God may not be white either. And God forbid, God may be a woman who isn't white. So that's where it leads to. That's why I don't refer to God as God the Father. I say the Creator.
Well done.
And, you know, and so, you know, if the Creator is not white, that means all these white racists are, oh, my God isn't white. And so that would kind of upset them a little bit. There's also a gospel hymn called Steal Away to Jesus. And if you know anything about gospel music was a code in the slavery days. To steal away to Jesus meant we're going to get the heck out of this plantation.
Thank you for that, of course. Right.
I think your analysis is so helpful, and I would just add to this because you've touched on a wonderful point. One of the other difficulties is, can people imagine that God is also not a man, which raises a whole nother issue as well, the ways in which people cannot associate the sacred with a woman, and the ways in which across the world, whether you're talking about white women or women of color, there is so much human degradation and loss of dignity because we never think of the sacred in terms of its feminine manifestations.
Edward?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, there's the biblical passage that God is neither a man nor the son of a man.
Right.
And that's what's really interesting as well about Jesus is he didn't do the things of manhood or of a patriarch for his age, right? He didn't have children. He didn't accumulate property. These are like, we think about gender, it's not just the biology we may have, but it's also the things that we do with it. And just as, you know, Reverend Braxton was talking about Jesus identifying, supporting, joining with the poor, he didn't participate in the kind of patriarchy of his day. And, you know, and I think that's what we get out of that is this real sense that it's not just white kind of authority that's vested in this notion that Jesus is white, but also Megyn Kelly said he was a white man. You know, and no one ever reports in the Bible of seeing his anatomy. And the reason is that doesn't matter. It's what we do with our bodies that matters in the Christian gospel, not what society, how society represents those bodies.
410-319-8888. Idris, you're on the air.
Idris?
Hello? Yes. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Very well. Welcome.
Good. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm going to be real brief with this.
Sure.
This issue about Jesus, his ethnicity, all of that, you know, all of that is already mentioned right in the Bible. It says clearly, you know, he was a man with skin that, like that of copper, as it burned in a furnace, hair like lamb's wool, thing like that. Also, you know, they used the image of a white Jesus to keep us in slavery the whole time. They used that image also in Africa to colonize a lot of the non-structured religious groups, like the so-called animist groups and people like that. This has been going on for a long time. This is how they got to the power level where they are now, because they convinced most of the world that God was a white person and that they were white persons and they were directly related to him. We've been hearing that for years. I mean, we all know truth now, finally. And, you know, I just think it's totally hypocritical of people, particularly people that are coming out of Rome, to say that, you know, this is the seat of the Christian concept of what Jesus was about when he said clearly, I come for none but the children of Israel. That's it for me.
Thank you. Let me talk about this one. This is important because what Idris said, and Brad and Edward, I want you both to weigh in here. I mean, I again was searching through all kinds of passages from that passage that Idris was quoting, and some people, it depends where you read it, would say hair that was like the color of wool, and some people want to read it a different way. Some people look at Lamentations whiter than milk, and that's not in every version of the Bible that's written. I think that's part of what people wrestle with here, and why it becomes so important given the domination that happened before.
So let me offer this and attempt, in the best sense of being a teacher, to be provocative. I think, for example, let's talk about the early Christian movement. The documents that give us the, quote, biographies of Jesus, the Gospels, they were not written, by and large, until, let's say, at least 40 years after the historical Jesus lived, died, and for those of us who happen to be Christians, say, lived again. So the early Christian movement was not terribly concerned about kind of historicity in the sense that we as 21st century persons are. They were much more interested in the meaning of Jesus' life, what he stood for, what he was willing to die for. And so I raise this very provocative issue, and I've done this in the congregation that I serve. The earliest canonical gospel in the New Testament, the Gospel of Mark, does not have a birth narrative. It is not at all concerned about Jesus' origins, let alone to get into conversations about his ethnicity. We see Jesus as a fully grown man joining a revolutionary movement that was considered to be a claim on Rome's authority. And as I remind people, if the Gospel of Mark is all we had, we would not have Christmas.
Hmm.
And so one community at least said, you know, where he came from, his birth, his parents, none of that is important. What's important is that he mounted a people's movement for the sake of poor people and to see if he could right the religious ship of his own religion and to see if he couldn't make a claim against imperial Rome. And it cost him his life. Where he came from, his birth, and all that stuff was not important to at least one group of people who gave us, arguably, the first historical gospel.
And Ed Blum, how does that fit into what the research you do about how that affected that image in America?
Yeah, you know, it was exactly what I was thinking about here. When we get to the image of Jesus in America, there is this play between imaging Jesus as sacrificed right at Easter and as gift to the world as baby. And there are times when Americans hone in a lot more on, oh, this white sacred figure, because rendered as white, sacrifices for the world. And at times when the United States has been trying to act kind of in this paternal, we're going to help save the world moment, we tend to fixate on that image. So why, Passion of the Christ was not a movie about the birth of Jesus. It was about the death, how Jesus was willing to die, to go out there and fight and die. Well, that's happening in the early 21st century when the United States is invested in a whole bunch of wars throughout the world, basically trying to make, quote-unquote, the world better. Now, whether we're making the world better or not, I don't know. I can't say anything about that. But then Jesus as babe, as innocent, this gift to the world from God, that tends to track more, get more traction when Americans have a more just sense of abundance, of like, oh, things are good here financially. So I just kind of find that funny, that the United States tends to pay more attention to baby Christmas Jesus in the good wealth times. We even see that joked about in Talladega Nights when Ricky Bobby is thanking God for all the money, the $15 million he's made, and he prays to the baby Jesus.
I raise this question. I wonder where the Jesus, particularly the picture you've placed on your Facebook page, I wonder where that Jesus would spend most of his time right now, were he in the United States. And here's the phrase I use, Mark, often when talking about it. I say Jesus was an African Asiatic Jew in his 30s, executed by the state on trumped up charges. Let's then superimpose that configuration on 21st century United States of America. Jesus more than likely would be hanging out with African-American and Latino brothers on death row.
Right.
If you want to take seriously issues of ethnicity and culture and power and privilege and sacrifice and justice, Jesus would spend time with them because he would understand in a guttural sense what it is like to be a, quote, person of color, unquote, who gets caught up in the criminal justice system to the point where it cost him his life.
We have a lot of people calling in. Let's try to get some of these calls at 410-319-8888. Let us go to Ray in Cockeysville. Ray, you there?
Hello? No, Greg.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Greg. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Good.
Oh, the point I wanted to make was the fact that the Santa Claus and Jesus, you know, these are things that are part of the spiritual realm in life, which is a more powerful part of life. And so, therefore, it all requires a level of imagination. And through the imagery over the years, a lot of people have developed a lot of mythologies through cultural and, of course, racial aspects of life. And they've applied it to this part of life. And they created this imagery, and, you know, it's in every, you know, they want to force it on every part of life, but everybody has their own imagination to believe in, and everybody develops their own mythology, and that's what we live by. And that's, as far as that is concerned, that's what it is.
Thank you so much, Greg, for those thoughts. Let's get some other one quick caller in here, and then we'll go back to our conversation. Go back to the phones, 410-319-8888. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark. As an observant too, I look at this discussion with a great deal of amusement. And as much as, of course, we don't depict God in any shape or form, because it says that the revelation of Sinai, you saw no bodily form. So we don't come onto this problem whatsoever. However, what really intrigues me is why you place so much emphasis on how he looked when you know that he kept rabbinical Judaism, because of even the things he said there. He was a Pharisee, no matter what you might say about him being in a deviant group of people. He was constantly talking about things that Moses' law was something coming upon all Christians. And it wasn't until about 200 years after Jesus lived that there was this break between the Gentiles and the Jews. The Jews were still keeping the Sabbath on the seventh day. They were keeping kosher. They were doing all the things that Jesus did as a religious Jew. And you don't have any qualms about Jesus not being depicted with a yarmulke or with tzitzis. It even says, it even says in the Testament about how a Gentile woman came to touch his garment and touched his fringes, the fringe of his garment. So therefore, you know Jesus also wore that. But the main thing that really bemuses me and amuses me about all of these things is that you don't care where it came from, when if you don't care of his parentage, having been from a man and woman, Jewish, from a normal birth, as the Bible depicts he's going to be, but yet he comes from an incestuous relationship with God and one of his children, Mary.
Okay.
That doesn't give you
Michael,
any kind of odious
Michael, thanks for call.
Thing.
So let me just. First of all, I'm sorry that the. As a Jew, the conversation amuses you. As a Jew, the conversation doesn't amuse me. I think it's an important conversation for us to have. And we also kind of want to go back to the revelation of Sinai. Also said that Moses saw the back of the Lord. What does that mean? I don't know. I'm not sure that Jews wore yarmulkes back then. They may have wore a head. I'm not sure. But tzitzis were real. People did wear fringes. They were the antennae to God, which is why our brother Rastafarians wear their dreadlocks. But I think that is – but Jesus as a Jew is an important part of this.
Absolutely.
Because he was.
Yes.
The Christianity came much years after the death of Jesus or Yeshua or however you want to say his name. Edward, you want to comment?
Yeah, you know, I think in so many ways, whenever we start talking about the race or of Jesus, the conversation does necessarily and should necessarily move to Jewishness. Like, what does that mean? And this sense of well, Jesus was a Jew, right? Comes up in a lot of these conversations. Well, we translate that into our American context, and we can ask, are Jews white? And historically, sometimes, some places, they've been deemed legally white, culturally white. At other times, not. And what happens with how Americans have thought about Jesus is the times when Jews, like in the early 20th century, were being deemed not white, and there were immigrant, you know, people trying to keep them out from immigrating to the United States, we see this push to de-Semiticize Jesus, to de-Judify him. And the same thing happened in Nazi Germany, that one of the reasons, if you're going to try to, you know, slaughter Jewish peoples, one thing you have to do is somehow try to distance Jesus from Jewishness. Now, and so when we get to this question of, like, who was Jesus and how does his race matter for us, I think it does in the background, that how Jews are classified and thought about in a society, it mm-hmm. really haunts the conversation in a lot of really important ways.
I think for me, as someone who has identified himself, across my life in Christian communities, but also is deeply committed to interfaith conversation, for me, what's most important in this moment is the message of that Jewish messenger. As I teach students in seminary, as I read the Gospels, Jesus had fundamentally one sermon. Had a lot of different takes on it, but it was basically one sermon. Get your heart and mind ready, because the reign of God, God's commonwealth, what some of us now call the kingdom of God, this age of deep devotion to God and sharing among all God's people is coming. But that fundamentally is what that Jewish itinerant preacher was standing for. And if we would take that message more seriously, again, conversations about justice and love and generosity and peacemaking would become more important than any kinds of potentially divisive conversations between and among religious groups and ethnicities.
410-319-8888. Will, you're on the air.
Good morning to you and your guest.
Good morning.
Just to add a little lightness to it, if we could all agree that Noah was the first guy that built a cruise ship, and also it took him about 120 years, and after about 40, 45 days, it ran aground, and a little bit before that, he released a dove. The dove went flying and came back with a twig. And then he realized, well, okay, we're on Mount Ararat, so we released all the animals. After a little while, the animals went wild, and they weren't peaceful anymore. They started killing and stuff. So his grandson, Nimrod, who was a mighty hunter, he started protecting the people. He killed the animals and keep them away and whatever. Then when he got married, he married his wife, Semiramis. So Semiramis and Nimrod...
I'm sorry, we don't have a lot of time left. I can't let you go through the entire tale of Noah, but we're almost out of time. Where did you want to take us with this?
And Semiramis, those two. Nimrod, Semiramis, and they became the first king and queen. And then Semiramis had her husband killed.
All right.
And then went to bury...
Well, I appreciate it. I'm sorry, we just can't go through the whole litany. I'd love to another day, but we only have a couple of minutes left here, and I was trying to get at least one more call, if we can get in another call here. Clarence, very quick thought. Clarence?
Yes.
Very quick thought.
Yes, image does play a role. It wasn't our choice to bring an image on. They made an image in the likeness of a white person. Therefore, a lot of black millions went to that grave thinking that we were the cursed people. So image did play a role in how we live in the day. And it wasn't our decision to do that. It was the whites that made that decision. So it was wrong. And it's important us to know that Jesus was a black man and what he stood for.
Thank you so much.
I think to the point of image, again, I say this with deep respect as a religious person myself, but in a recent article I raised this question. Will we have a female president in the United States before a female is allowed to preside at the Vatican?
Edward Blum, final thought.
Oh, you know, I think what the conversation shows is folks can try to push away considerations of race and religion, but whenever someone in the media brings it up, all of a sudden people, you know, come out of the woodwork. They know their Bibles, they know their sacred texts, and they want to understand how those beliefs impact and, you know, affect the world we live in today. And so I think more discussion about all of this and less, and not like closing off conversation, is kind of my take home thought.
No, I think it's an important conversation to have. I think that we didn't touch all the base we wanted to touch, which was some of the things I wanted to think about. We'd do another day, which had to do with the use of Christianity in slavery in America. I mean, they had to christen Africans as Christian, or they couldn't have sexual relations with the women. That was very real. Just to kind of delve more deeply into what the culture surrounding Jesus meant and how race fit into that over the last 2,000 years. And we can play with that another day, and we will come back to that. Dr. Edward Blum is Associate Professor of History at San Diego State University. His book is The Color of Christ, The Son of God, and the Saga of Race in America, which will be linked to in our book. Thank you so much, and our website. Ed Blum, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Reverend Brad Braxton, Dr. Braxton, Senior Pastor here in Baltimore at the Open Church, and the Lois Craddock Perkins Professor of Homiletics at the Perkins School of Theology in Dallas, Texas. Thank you so much for coming in today. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Mark.
And thank all of you for writing in. And please continue the dialogue on Facebook. I'll write back to you about the image that I posted. We can do some more talking about that together. We're going to take a very brief break. And when we return, we're going to take a look at something more mundane happening in the state of Maryland, which is what's happening to the computer system and healthcare in Maryland. Then we'll meet the Oblate sisters in a very interesting conversation to wind up our show today. Stay with us. We'll be right back.